Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I am your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on October the 9th, 2014, in the evening. Since we last spoke, the Orioles swept the American League Division Series from the Detroit Tigers. I still can't believe it happened. I watched all the games. I cannot believe they happened, but it was awesome. I am joined, as always, by my podcasting partner in crime, Stacey Folkemer. Stacey, how's it going?
It is pretty freaking awesome.
So the Orioles are going to be in the American League Championship Series, and yeah, it's awesome. And I haven't gotten tired of saying it. The Orioles are going to be in the American League Championship Series. It's really great. I never would have believed it was possible, and it happened. Like just imagine if you had gone back in February and said, "Oh yeah, the Orioles are going to have basically Manny Machado will miss like a third or more of the season, and Matt Wieters is only going to play a month, and Chris Davis is going to bat under 200 and get suspended, and Ubaldo is going to have an ERA of like 5." What would you say about that Orioles team? You'd be like, "Oh, so they're getting back to losing almost 100 games, right?" But no.
And I think that I would spend time saying things like, I hate the Orioles. Why do the Orioles hate me?
We
But
did
I.
say that from a game to game basis here and there through the year as they
Yeah,
had
but
some
it
frustrating
never
moments.
stretched on as long as it has in the past.
No, it really didn't. And instead, they won 96 games and walked through the American League East.
Yep, relative ease. They got their captured the division title. And with relative ease, they dispatched of the Detroit Tigers.
Three Cy Young winners all sent down. Now,
That's
granted, it
right.
was really only one of those Cy Young winners they really beat hard.
Well, I would say that the only one who pitched well was David Price.
Yeah.
I think that Justin Verlander didn't give up very many runs, but he only pitched 5 innings.
Yep.
You can't expect to win pitching only 5 innings.
Especially with that Tigers bullpen.
So I think, Price pitched as very well. He gave up that one kind of cheap home run to Nelson Cruz in Tiger
Yeah,
Stadium,
it
not
never would have been a
Camden
home run if that
Yards.
game wasn't in Camden Yards. Oh, wait,
It
no.
wasn't in Camden
Man,
Yards.
TBS was so obnoxious about that home run. What a stunner was the Dennis Eckersley line about that. It's like,
Oh,
get
those
over it,
guys were
get over it. Your golden boys lost.
right. So I would say that they roughed up Scherzer, they knocked out Verlander, and they did just enough to beat Price. But you know what? All three of them were outpitched by the Orioles. All three of them. Well,
By Chris Tillman, not Chen, meant not so much.
Chris Taillman, Kevin Gausman, and Bud Norris.
Tillman, Gausman, and Norris outpitched the trophies.
That's right.
So, Cy Young, who needs him? Well, it'd be nice to have a Cy Young winner, but
Yeah, I would take any of those guys in the Orioles
it
rotation,
didn't help them
but
any in
didn't
that
help them.
particular series. No Cy Young winners await on the Royals. The Royals being about as much of a surprise team as the Orioles, ending their own playoff drought because they hadn't been back to the playoffs since 1985 when they last won the World Series. And here they are. And, Stacy and I, we were talking about how this is basically the only team that makes the Orioles like not the sentimental favorite, the team you just kind of look at and want to win. Because it's the
Yes.
Royals, and everybody like feels bad for them.
There are 15 teams in the American League, and the Orioles could be playing any of the other 13, and the entire country would be rooting for the Orioles to finally get to the World Series. But instead, they had to get one-upped by one of the few, the only team in the American League, really, that's been more futile than the Orioles over the last 20 years. And so now America's sweetheart is the Royals and not the Orioles.
The ESPN had one of their Sports Nation polls, which of course are not scientific, but they're sometimes interesting to look at. And it was like, who do you want to win, the Royals versus the Orioles? And the Orioles one was like Maryland, Virginia, and DC and Delaware, and that was it. And like everywhere else was blue for the Royals. And I was just like, man, that's rough.
Yeah, and they had that other one, who do you think will win? And basically the East Coast all picked Baltimore, but everyone else picked the
yeah,
Royals.
Yeah, it was like everywhere from Maryland north and east, and it was orange, and everywhere else was blue. Just funny.
Well, you know, we don't. The Orioles have not had the support of the national media in as long as I can remember. So, you know what? What's one more year?
That's right. You know, one of the weird things about the Orioles being in the ALCS is it's like everyone is writing about them. Because I'm used to, like, no one ever writes about the Orioles, and now it's like they're all over the place. Just all the internet-only places, and, you know, ESPN will do stuff on them, and it's just like, wow. This is what it's like when all these people care about the Orioles, because they're one of only four teams that's left.
Yeah, they can only write about, and how many, and what can you possibly write about the Cardinals or the Giants that you haven't already written already?
Right, you've written about in the last 6 years, every year. So in that sense, it's interesting that the Orioles are like the new thing, but even if they're not the favorites, although they are the favorites in Las Vegas, because the Orioles are, I believe, 5-7 favorites to win the ALCS, and they have the current best odds based on the email that we got earlier today to win the World Series at 11-5, which is kind of blows my mind. This is the world we're living in. The Orioles are the current Vegas favorites to win the World Series. It makes me nervous because how 2 years ago you had them 90-1 before the season started.
That's right.
And now here we are, and it's, you know, there's 8 wins left. And they can win the World Series if they win 8 more games, and 11-5, and they're the favorite team.
It's crazy.
It's a weird world we're living in.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I made that bet and the odds were 90-1 that the Orioles would win the World Series, that was before the 2012 season started, and they obviously did not win the World Series, but it was very exciting, hoping that they would. Just a bit ago, a friend of mine told me that she's actually not an Orioles fan, but she told me, oh, I'm rooting for the Orioles because before the season started, I was in Vegas, and I bet $20 that they would win the World Series. And I said, oh, well, how much would you get if they win? And she said, $400. Where it would have been $1,800 if they had won the year that I put it down. So, I mean, the Orioles have, you know, people are noticing that they're better. And so the odds were only, what, like...
Yeah, hitting on 20-1 there is a bit different than 90.
20-1 instead of 90-1. So, I mean, people have... But even then, that's a huge difference from the absolute favorites currently to win the World Series, which is nuts.
And also kind of awesome.
Totally awesome. Totally nuts.
It's like, honestly, for a fan base that just craves to be respected and acknowledged and have the Orioles just be respected and acknowledged, well, I mean, what more can you say than Las Vegas thinks they're currently the most likely to win the World Series? You know, they're the people who are there to make money off of people betting on sports, and they're setting that. It's interesting.
I don't think that the players, and I think this is not only true of the Orioles, but of a lot of teams throughout history, but they seem to thrive on people not giving them respect. And there was an interview after they won the ALDS. It was when they were in the clubhouse spraying champagne, and it was J.J. Hardy and Steve Pearce, and Steve Pearce was wearing those ginormous goggles, and they both looked just like... They couldn't even believe that they were on a team where this was happening, and whoever was interviewing them said something about, you know, no one thought that you could win this series, and they were both just like, fine, keep on saying it, bring it on. So I try to adopt that same attitude, but now people are actually saying that they can do it, so now what? You know, it's a little frightening.
Except our old standby Fangraphs haters actually project their playoff odds say the Royals have a 67% chance to win the series, so... If there's anything that gives me some comfort, it's the fact that Fangraphs, which has never understood the Orioles, 63%. Either way, like whatever they have that makes them think it's the Orioles are 63% favorites over the Orioles. Like, I don't know. And if anyone has been the most wrong about the Orioles, it's probably been Fangraphs. So that makes me feel okay.
That's true. Although Dave Cameron, the founder and head honcho over at Fangraphs, in a chat the other day actually said he doesn't think that he thinks the Orioles are are better than what Fangraphs is predicting that they'll do, which he has spent much of the season kind of defending his site's number crunching. So it was interesting to hear him say that.
That is interesting. I wonder why that was. I find that
fascinating. I only saw some tidbits that some Camden chatterers pasted into, you know, the comment sections. I didn't read the whole chat, but it sounded like he was a little higher on the Orioles than the machine that spits out the numbers.
Well, in that case, hopefully he's right and his numbers are wrong.
I think it's going to be an even series. I think it's really hard to try and predict what's going to happen. The teams are evenly matched. They have, I mean, they have some different strengths, but they have a lot of the same strengths as well. A lot of the same weaknesses. So it's going to be, I think, a really good series.
Of all the statistics that I have read people mentioning, the one as far as them being teams that succeed in different ways is you've got the Orioles, who are the team with the most home runs and the fewest stolen bases in all of baseball, against the team, the Royals, with the fewest home runs and the most stolen bases in all of baseball. So they've really succeeded in completely different ways, and it's just really interesting that's going to be that much of a polar opposite.
Yeah, I think one thing that benefits the Orioles in the matchup, and this has been discussed in a couple different places, so it's hardly new information, but, you know, but neither the Orioles nor the Royals get on base at basically the same rate. I think the Royals are like 0.003 better at getting home base over the regular season than the Orioles were, so not very different at all. And but one of the ways that they get on base a lot and one of the ways that they cause trouble when they're on base is by putting the ball into play and making a lot of contact. And if there's one place that I'm confident the Orioles have one of the best things in baseball, it's their infield defense. And so if that's going to be the Royals' game plan, then it might be thwarted by the Orioles' infield.
It'll be interesting to see how the speed of the Royals kind of, well, one, with the Orioles' infield being what it is, and J.J. Hardy, owner of a new 3-year contract extension, is a big part of that. Probably on the road to another Gold Glove. Mm-hmm. Ryan Flaherty actually looked pretty good in the ALDS. Now, small sample size, but if he's amping it up for the playoffs, that's pretty good. Scope, I never worry about his arm because he's just really good, really strong.
Yeah, and he turns just that super fast double play. As long as he doesn't drop the ball because he's making the turn, you know, the transfer so quickly, then he's golden. You won't find anyone better than him and Hardy in the middle of the infield as far as that goes.
The Royals shortstop Alcides Escobar is no slouch either, but their second baseman I don't think is on the scope level of just delivering. I don't even know who the Royals second baseman is. That shows you how
Omar Infante.
That's right, Omar Infante, come on.
Who I actually, in the offseason, thought that it would have been, well, none of us knew, and I think including the Orioles necessarily, that Jonathan Scope was going to force his way onto the team out of spring training. And one of the, and Omar Infante actually was someone who I thought would be a good choice for the Orioles to sign, but then I think he signed a 3-year deal with the Royals, which kind of threw some cold water on that wish of mine. And it turns out, you know, it worked out okay.
Yeah, Omar Infante is 32, and he is signed through 2017. So he signed a four-year deal with an option year. Yeah. So, you know, enjoy that Dayton Moore.
Right. I mean, he's been okay for them this year, and he is a good defender, but 4 years for a 32-year-old, we've been down that road before.
We have, and it didn't work out very well, although obviously Omar Infante is not Brian Roberts, but...
Yet. I mean, he's 32 years old, you know, one injury, and he could be Brian Roberts for the Royals and for the next couple years, and I don't wish that on them, but it's just the kind of the curse of the middle infielder.
Bringing up that kind of interesting signing is another one of the things I find is an interesting parallel in this series, because I feel like both the Orioles and the Royals are like succeeding in ways that are kind of counter to the current like mainstream belief of what a quote-unquote successful baseball team should look like. because, I mean, certainly nobody is going to give much praise to the Royals general manager, Dayton Moore, because he's made a lot of boneheaded moves over the years, and then here suddenly the Orioles are winning, or the Royals are winning, excuse me. And, of course, we all remember before Dan Duquette got hired and the Orioles GM job was, like, considered a complete laughing stock, and the Orioles themselves were a laughing stock, and yet here they are succeeding, even though nobody says, well, you know, you got to have a number one starting pitcher, and the Orioles have Chris Tillman, and then it's like, well, you got to take walks and get on base, and the Orioles don't, and they just hit home runs, and they don't care. The Royals got panned for the James Shields trade, and now it's like, wow, that was it's a pretty good trade. And then Wade Davis, their eighth inning guy, was like the throwaway inclusion in that trade, and he's freaking, like, one ERA. Literally, a one ERA in 72 innings this year. Wade Davis.
Yeah.
So it's like, almost like people who talk about baseball just don't know as much as the people who make decisions about baseball teams.
Well, you know, people are always going to say, because one of the things that people like to say after they disagree with you and someone and then it works out is that just because it worked out doesn't mean that the decision was the right one. And that is certainly true in some cases, you know. But, you know, Will Myers hasn't really done anything. And I know he's young and he might still have a very, very good career. But he hasn't really done anything for the Rays too much yet. And if the Royals... Well, I would say even now, you know, they've made it this far. But if they make it to the World Series, how can you... Part of trading young prospects is risk. And yeah, there's the risk that the Royals wouldn't be good enough to compete while James Shields was under contract. But they took that risk, and that risk worked. So even if Will Myers goes on and has a great career, and the people who hated the trade from the get-go say, well, look at his career based on James Shields. Well, that's not necessarily... I mean, Dayton Moore...
He's in, like, year 10 of his five-year plan, which is why people joke about him.
People do joke about him, but at the same time, I'm sure that he knew Will Myers' potential, but he was gambling that it would be good enough in the short run. And you know what? Maybe that wasn't the right decision, but it worked. And maybe he is smarter than people give him credit for, which I think even the dumbest, you know, there was one Fangraphs chat where with Jeff Sullivan, where someone asked, how come nobody, you know, how come you don't work for a front office or Dave Cameron doesn't work for a front office? You guys seem to know so much more. And his answer was basically like, we're stupid. We're very smart, but compared to the dumbest GM in baseball, we're stupid. And that was the, you know, I liked that. Well, I like Jeff Sullivan. I think that he makes a lot of sense and he doesn't take himself too seriously. But he is very smart, but he's right. The dumbest GM is way smarter than anyone who writes about baseball on a website. And I don't know.
But thankfully, the dumbest GM will do things like trade Adam Jones and Chris
Tillman.
Oh,
sure.
For
well,
Eric
that,
Bedard,
well
which,
those guys don't stay GMs.
Yeah,
is Bill Bavasi right now? I don't know.
Don't care.
But I mean, so who knows? But I think that the Royals fans, even a lot of them, if they had to disagree with that trade now, are so excited that the Royals are in the playoffs that maybe that'll change their mind a little bit.
And I mean, it's not quite the same thing with what the Orioles did this year with trading Eduardo Rodriguez to get Andrew Miller. But I mean, if the Orioles get into the World Series and Andrew Miller has already proven he's going to be a big part of that, getting through the playoffs with his pitching in the division series against the Tigers, it's like, well, unless Eduardo Rodriguez like comes up and wins three Cy Youngs for the Red Sox, knock on wood, I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, it's a trade that has paid off for the Orioles. Just the question is, what did they give up for that? But
and it is, and I know that is a trade that people hated. And when I first heard it, I can't remember who, it might have been you, but whoever was the first person who told me that was like being rumored or about to happen, and they said Eduardo Rodriguez, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, is that, how is that possible? Because Miller is a relief pitcher, but you know, that's, if there's one thing we've seen, especially the way that Buck Showalter is choosing to go about things, which has proven very effective so far, is that in the playoffs, and relief pitching is much more important than kind of over the whole season, I think. I mean, Andrew Miller has pitched he pitched in two of the three games. He pitched 1 2/3 innings without letting a hit in both of them. And that is so valuable that if the Orioles get to the World Series or win the World Series, which is something I'm still not ready to think about, but he's going to be a huge reason. And that's what, and maybe Eduardo Reyes will go on and he'll be great, just like Will Myers might go on and be great. But just because that might happen doesn't mean that the GMs didn't know that they might be good down the road. It just meant that they needed something now. And as we have say so much on Canon Chat, flags fly forever.
Flags fly forever. And I mean, it's one thing if you're trading guys to get people that when you're chasing like a lost cause. But I mean, the Orioles moves this year. Like, I mean, last year, think about it. Last year, the reliever trade was get Francisco Rodriguez for Nick Delmonico. And Francisco Rodriguez came over, and he was, like, terrible. So yep. It's like, oh, who could have imagined that a guy who's pitching way beyond his career levels, who's, like, 30-whatever years old, is going to come over and suddenly regress? Like, wow, that was an absolute stunner.
Right, to the American League.
Going from Milwaukee to Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that the Orioles obviously were in contention last year, but even though they weren't technically eliminated until maybe like the last week or the week before, you know, of the season, we knew for a while that they something crazy would have had to happen for them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they didn't get eliminated until like the last week of the season or whatever. Yeah, but they were never like in the picture for the.
They were never like they weren't eliminated, but they would have had to play very well and had another team play poorly, which does happen. We've seen, but it's not typical. And I think that you know Nicky Delmonico is a nobody prospect. He didn't even play for much of this year. He had some kind of personal issues. And I think, you know, Dan Duquette wasn't ready to give up on Eduardo Rodriguez in 2013 because he knew it was the longest of shots for them to even make it. But this year he knew and Eduardo Rodriguez is just as valuable. You know, he's much more valuable, but he got a much better piece back in Andrew Miller and he waited until the time was right to do it. The Orioles this year are the kind of team where you do that, you know? I mean, heck, the Rangers traded Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter for Koji the year that they went to the World, you know, they were going to the World Series in 2011. Because when you're at that level, although Koji wasn't very good for Texas, but
Koji was good for the Orioles, but he didn't.
He was
work
good
out
for the
Texas.
Orioles and he was good for the Red Sox, but in between. But you know, so I think that's a gamble that you make when you're that close to the ultimate goal. And you know, I hope that Eduardo Rodriguez never pitches a no-hitter against the Orioles. But if he does, I hope it's, you know, with the flag waving in the background
yeah,
of Kenneth Yards from the Orioles having their right.
World Series banner is flapping on top of the Jumbotron, then that will ease the sting just a little bit.
But so one thing that I have slowly started doing, and I can't believe that it's with Dan Duquette of all general managers, is trusting their decision making. And I mean, obviously the Orioles for a lot of years had a lot of front office troubles and they were terrible on the field. The moves they made didn't make sense. The players they chose to give money to didn't make sense. But Dan Duquette has earned from me the benefit of the doubt, you know, where if he does plenty of things that start backfiring, then I reserve the right, of course, to change my mind in the future. But right now, the moves that he makes, all of those moves that we didn't even understand where he was building all that depth and we were just making fun of him.
He's
so much smarter than us.
Think about it when the Orioles signed the minor league deal for Delmon Young back this spring. It's like, oh man, here's the Orioles bringing in this like scumbag guy, and he's not even going to do anything. And then when they like DFA'd Steve Pierce, we were like, man, why didn't they DFA Delmon Young? Well, Delmon Young has paid off.
If Delmon Young won that game for the Orioles.
If only because, I mean, and he did more than just, you know, the game two decisive hit, but if only for that, it was worth it.
Yeah. I mean, in the regular season, 24 plate appearances of the pinch hitter, 14 times on base. What is that? And that's someone that that Dan Duquette went and found.
Anybody could have had him.
Gave a chance to, signed to a minor league deal. It wouldn't have hurt the Orioles if they had to cut him. But Dan Duquette saw what he was capable of and saw that he fit it, that he, a place that he could fit in on this team. I didn't think that Delmon Young could fit in on this team at all. But you know what? He did. And he's helped the team a lot, and he's been very valuable. So, I don't know. I'm in this weird place in my Orioles fandom where who I was as an Orioles fan a couple years ago doesn't even recognize now.
Go like another one just from during the season. Think about how much of a head-scratcher it was when the Orioles traded for Nick Hundley. And it was like, man, why do we need Nick Hundley? If there's going to be no Weeders, why don't they just... They're screwed at catcher anyway, so why don't they just go with Caleb Joseph and Steve Clevenger? And now, like, Nick Hundley is, like, the personal Chris Tillman whisperer. And it's like, oh, well, I guess they had some idea of why they wanted Nick Hundley, and that's why they got Nick Hundley. Because it's not like they missed Troy Patton.
It feels like the combination of Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter... I mean, they of course they make bad decisions, mistakes. They make mistakes because everyone makes mistakes. But their track record together as a team has been pretty impeccable. And, you know, I'm conditioned to criticize everything that the Orioles do. I'm conditioned, and I'm not out of that yet. But they're helping me get over that.
Much like I expect every move the Orioles make to, like, turn out terrible. And yet, then we get, well, Ubaldo didn't work out so well, but every other thing they've done this year for this year has pretty much delivered. I mean, think about it. If the even go back to like last year, and the Bud Norris trade was probably more in with this year in mind, even. And, you know, it was kind of a pointless thing for last year, but now suddenly we've got Bud Norris outdueling David Price in a decisive playoff series, and he's got a career postseason ERA of 0, which probably won't continue through the ALCS, but it would be pretty awesome if it did.
Could.
I mean, you know.
The way that Buck Showalter has erred on the side of caution with his starting pitchers, and he can only do it because the bullpen is so good. Like, you saw, I mean, they talked to, I mean, writers and everyone talked about how Buck Showalter outmanaged Brett Ausmus, and it's true, but also Buck Showalter doesn't have to stick with Bud Norris any longer than he needs to because he has all those great guys in the bullpen. So I think that it's very easy for him to be proactive in going and getting his guys. Like, even Tillman didn't pitch that deep into the game because he didn't need to. The bullpen is well rested. They are very good, and you know, they don't, like you said, we don't have the aces, but we don't need the aces because we have a manager who is pulling them in the exact right time.
I was reading Andrew Miller's game logs, and he pitched in 73 games in the regular season, and he came in the sixth inning in exactly one of those games. But then the ALDS rolls along, and Buck Showalter just has no problem putting him in there in the sixth inning right after his starter comes out and riding him for five outs. Because if you can get Andrew Miller to go five outs, I mean, you're in good shape. Because then Andrew Miller turns into Darren O'Day. Darren O'Day turns into Zach Britton. And that's lights out. If all goes according to plan, which it did many times through the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful. And well, Ned Yost has a pretty solid bullpen himself, although, as we saw in his wild card game, he is not going to necessarily be as unorthodox in deploying those relievers.
Right.
They're a pretty ferocious trio of Wade Davis, Greg Holland, and Kelvin Herrera, which is not the correct order for those guys, by the way. I think Herrera is the seventh inning guy,
yep.
Davis the eighth inning, and Holland the closer.
And, you know, Herrera, one thing that could work in the Orioles' favor, I'm not sure, and you don't ever want to root for an injury, but he did have to come out of a game with some forearm tenderness.
And he threw like one
Although
pitch, and then he was out or something.
Yeah, but then he came back a couple days later, and he threw like 100 miles an hour, so everyone's declaring him healed. And he probably is, because you're not going to come back and be that effective if, you know, and throwing that hard. I don't think if something's really wrong.
Right,
but,
if it was like
you know,
Tommy John is
right.
The UCL tear, excuse me, would be
right.
You know, his velocity would be down or something.
Right.
Such.
So, but maybe he is. You know, I asked the I did a Q&A with the editor over at Royals Review, and you know, I asked if they have any weaknesses, and he said they're tired, and you know, Herrera could be injured, and that would be the only thing. That and if their starters can get through six innings, then they are. Because as you mentioned, Ned Yost, he showed in the wildcard game that he doesn't really do too well with straying from bullpen roles. He didn't know what to do when he needed to bring someone in the sixth inning. So instead of going to Kelvin Herrera in the sixth inning the way that Buck Showalter went to Andrew Miller, he went to someone else, and it almost cost them the game. It didn't because the A's were desperate to lose that game, it seemed like. But, you know, hopefully Ned Yost will run into that same kind of indecision during the ALCS.
Yost had his quote. There was a big Royals loss. I think it was against the Tigers as during the season. And it like they blew the game in the sixth inning. And it was like two outs in the sixth inning. And Yost said something like, boy, it was a shame we couldn't get one more out and get to Kelvin Herrera. And it's just like, well, if it was that important to you, why didn't you have
right.
Kelvin Herrera get that out?
Oh, that is so frustrating.
And, I mean, that's the kind of quotes he gives, and yet he's managed them into the ALCS. So, well, go to another angle for the series, then. Yost versus Buck Showalter, and certainly it seems like a mismatch because Showalter is pushing all the right buttons, and that's a big part of why the Orioles swept the Tigers, whereas Yost is basically slamming his hands on the keyboard and succeeding in spite of that.
Yeah, I mean, the Royals Review, Max at Royals Review, did give Ned Yost a lot of credit for the fact that the bullpen has been so successful overall, you know, and talked about his role in helping them kind of play to their strengths, which is their speed. So he does have his good points, but it just seems tactically he's not always he's not on par with a guy like Buck Showalter.
As seen with all of his sacrifice bunts in that wild card game also.
Oy.
It's like, I mean, I don't know, maybe the value of the sacrifice bunt is greater when you have such speed demons. But then again, why do you need a bunt if they can just basically walk to second base with
yeah.
you know, like what, Gore, Dyson, Kane all can just like steal at will pretty much.
Yeah, you know, we looked
bunt?
It up before. As a team, what, over 80% success rate on stolen bases, which is crazy.
Dyson stole 36, Escobar stole 31, Kane stole 28. Terrence Gore only appeared in 11 regular season games and stole 5 bases. Like, I mean, I don't know, maybe the bunt is more valuable in that case. Because, again, it's another one of these things where, well, this goes against the quote unquote established wisdom of how to have a successful baseball team right now, and the Royals bunt all the time and they don't care. Here they are, they're in the ALCS.
Yep.
It should be an interesting series. I hope the Orioles win. I think the Orioles maybe should have an advantage, but I mean, it only takes, like, if Chris Tillman comes out in game one and throws a clunker and the Orioles can't come back against the Royals bullpen because it's not the Tigers bullpen, then it's like, oh, suddenly they're in a 1-0 hole. Oh, no. It only takes that and they're off to the races in the wrong direction.
I'm nervous for the series to start and I'm excited for the series to start, but I'm not as nervous as I feel like maybe I should be. Like, I'm not as nervous as I was about the Tigers series. And I hope that I don't end up that I'm just overestimating the Orioles, but they just they just seem to make all the right moves.
Like, honestly, I felt it. And when I did the prediction with when I went on the Bless You Boys podcast, I said the Tigers would win in five just because, like, I couldn't imagine the Orioles really winning that series. Like, I sort of knew that it could happen, but I just didn't imagine that it would. But when I look at this Royals series, like, I can see a path where the ways that I know the Orioles are good can overcome the Royals, because the Royals were not an offensive juggernaut this year. So as long as they don't get burned by, like, all of the stolen bases, then I feel like the Orioles starters should be able to keep down a generally weak Royals offense, and the Orioles offense should be able to, especially in the games at Camden Yards, have success against the Royals starters. We'll see if that proves true, but it feels like more favorable to the Orioles, and, you know, that's probably reflected in why the Orioles are considered the favorites. But
yep, which is scary.
It is. Even thinking of the Orioles as the favorites is a scary thing. So it's nice that they're the favorites, but then it's scary because we don't know how to handle the Orioles being.
I'm coming around on it, though. You know, I can feel myself becoming the arrogant Orioles fan who is favored in the World Series. Not really, though.
I don't know that the Orioles will be favored if they make it to the World Series. And if they're against the Cardinals or something, I'll be like, oh, my God.
Oh, Cardinals, so nice, and the Cardinals, though.
Cardinals with Adam Wainwright and then, like, Matt Carpenter with all the clutch home runs.
Dude, that Matt Carpenter, have you ever watched him taken at bat? It is, like, a masterpiece. He does not swing at anything that is not his pitch. He doesn't swing at anything. I mean, I don't want to jump the gun and start talking about the Cardinals because whatever, but...
Right, we got to get through the Royals first. So.
I hate watching that guy taking a bat, but I love watching that guy taking a bat. He's amazing. But maybe we'll talk about that next week after the Orioles finish up with
We don't want to dwell on it too much, but you know what? Without even getting into jinx territory, it's just cool to be like, you know what? If the Orioles somehow do win this series, we got to worry about which of these National League teams would we want to win. Like, it's neat to be in that position.
It is.
I don't know how to handle it. They're four wins away from the World Series, and that's pretty cool. They got to win the four games, and it's cool to even be able to ponder it. As opposed to 2 years ago, like, I was not in any situation where I could look even at all beyond one series, because it was just like this dream that I knew I was going to be woken up from at some point. But now it's like, it's not a dream. This is reality, man. We're here. This is it. And it's cool.
It's cool. And the Orioles are good enough to keep going.
They are.
I don't feel like they're lucky to be here. I feel like they belong here, and that's weird.
Despite certain proclamations through the year of being an okay team with an inflated record. No. The Orioles earned their place here. They walked through the American League East. They stomped the Central Division winning Tigers with all their Cy Young winners, with two-time reigning AL MVP, with another guy who's going to place high up on the MVP voting this year, Victor Martinez. In spite of the fact that those guys had a pretty decent series, first couple games anyway, the Orioles just, they won. They deserved to win because they were the better team, and there was no doubt about it, and that's why they swept.
Amazing.
So the Orioles rotation, I think, is going to line up. They only announced today, although I just kind of assumed that Chris Tillman would start game one, and I don't really know who's coming after that. I mean, we know it's going to be Gonzalez, Chen, Norris, but not really what order.
I would like to think, and I don't know, but it seems to me like they might want to save Chen for when they get to Kansas City.
I feel like Chen is the one who's most homer-prone out of all of them, and so the more expansive Kauffman Stadium would perhaps be a better place to pitch him, especially because he's a lefty and the Royals have more lefty batters.
Also, and I don't know, I mean, you got to go with who you think gives you the best chance to win, of course, but Miguel Gonzalez hasn't pitched. So I don't know how much longer they want him to sit, you know?
Yeah.
So that might be an argument to give him maybe a game two start or a game three start. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he's fine, but You know, you don't want them sitting too long.
Showalter told the media today that he would let the starters know who would be starting when before they left the park here on Thursday. So they know. We don't know, but they know. So it's not going to be a mystery. I think I read that Gonzalez threw like a 3-inning simulated game during the week. So, you know, whatever about that. Whoever knows what the value of a simulated game is. But they tried to keep him not a little bit fresh. Whatever 3 innings of a simulated game will do for that purpose. But.
Right. And whatever Buck and the pitching coach think will keep Gonzalez ready, you know, I'm obviously comfortable with that, but it just, you know, one of the things that you hear about sometimes with the playoffs is, I mean, the pitchers especially, not so much the position players, but the pitchers, if they're not in their routine, can sometimes be a little off whack. So, but yeah, Miguel Gonzalez knows now when he's pitching and he knows when, how prepared to be, but plus I just like him. I like to watch him pitch, so it would be nice to see him sooner rather than later.
I guess if there's one advantage, it's that the Royals starters will also be kind of out of whack there because they swept their series also. So they,
yeah, neither team has played all week.
They've got a long layoff. And their probable game four starter is our old friend Jeremy Guthrie. And he did not pitch in the ALDS at all. So... Well, there's certainly a guy who's going to have to shake off some rust when he finally does pitch. I was reading, I think, on Royals Review that they will probably line it up with Shields in Game 1, Ventura in Game 2, and then Vargas and Guthrie, and then start repeating.
Right. They definitely, according to Royals Review, they want to keep, if they can, Vargas and Guthrie pitching at Kauffman Stadium and not in Camden Yards.
That seems like a good decision because despite the fact that Camden Yards, I still don't know why it was, but the park factor for home runs was very low compared to usual at Camden Yards this year. And I can't imagine why it would have changed.
Plus it's hard, you know, it's only 1 year, right? So
yeah,
who knows what it could have been, but I do know that regardless, Camden Yards is smart. Kauffman is not a home run hitter's kind of ballpark. It's just bigger. It just has bigger dimensions. So you want your fly ball pitchers there.
And especially now that it's cooled down to October weather, you know, you got to imagine that'll depress the home run number some. So even add in the fact that, well, you still don't want to risk pitching him at Camden Yards, even if it's a cold October night, which it sure seems like Friday is going to be. Cold
if
and rainy reminds me of Game 1 of the 2012 ALDS, where I waited out that rain delay and was pretty cold and miserable by the end. Although that was certainly not helped by Jim Johnson having his Jim Johnson experience in the ninth inning of that particular game.
That was the beginning of the end for Jim Johnson.
Yeah.
But you know what? Those days are past.
Not our problem anymore.
Oh.
Although I'm sad that he is not good anymore, but I'm glad it's not on the Orioles that he's not good. So Jason Vargas gave up 19 home runs in 187 innings, and Jeremy Guthrie, of course, we know all about him and home runs, but he gave up 23 home runs in 202 and two-thirds innings. I haven't looked at the splits, but I have a feeling if I pull them up right here, I'm going to discover more away than home. Sure enough, Guthrie pitched basically the same number of innings home and road, and 14 homers on the road versus 9 at home. Vargas, I'm going to guess, is going to be much the same. Now, the Orioles starters have their own problems with home runs at times, so Vargas actually gave up more at home than on the road. I'm surprised by that. 12 at home in 101 innings versus 7 on the road in 85 and two-thirds. Orioles homer-prone starters are Chen and Norris, so I guess there's another benefit if you want to throw Gonzalez into game two so he doesn't have more of a layoff, is then you've lined up your more homer-prone starters to be... Actually, Gonzalez is the worst of the homer-prone starters, so maybe that doesn't work out so well. Let's forget I said anything about that. Gonzalez, 1.42 homers per nine is actually not very good. Gonzalez.
No, that's pretty bad.
That is not so
good. Doesn't feel like he gave up a ton of home runs this year. But hey, that's what the numbers say.
The numbers do not lie. 25 home runs in 159 major league innings.
That's worse than Guthrie.
It is. So.
Well, you know, yeah, that's not great.
You know, I don't know. Now that I'm like looking at stuff, I'm like making myself nervous. Whereas just 10 minutes
well, then
ago,
we,
I was feeling
then
confident.
You should just,
I need to stop.
Just stop.
Stop.
Just gotta
stop looking at stuff.
That's right.
So I don't know. I guess getting into the Royals' middle relief will be more important than it was even against the Tigers, because not so much that the Royals' middle relief is bad, but just their back end is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that tends to be a strategy for the Orioles to employ even in the best of times, so I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I feel like it could go well for the Orioles, but you can certainly see disaster if their home run power doesn't show up and they strike out forever and ever.
In fairness, you pretty much always see disaster.
I know,
so.
I do. It's true. That's certainly true of me, as everyone who's listened to this podcast over the years probably knows. Now, granted, it was for good reason for much of the early days of the podcast, but, you know.
Those days are over, friend.
The Orioles are in the ALCS. We can party like it's 1997. Hopefully we can party like it's 1983. I wasn't around to party in 1983, but if we can party like that, that'd be okay. A week from the time everyone will hear this, 5 games of the ALCS will be played. So within a week from now, it could be over.
I hope it's not.
Unless the Orioles have won. I feel like the best case scenario, well, the best case scenario is the Orioles sweep, but if they're going to win and it's going to be a well-fought series, I would like it to be. Have the moment at Camden Yards, Game 6. Because then it's like you don't have the tension of Game 7. Because if they're like 3-2 coming back to Baltimore and they win that game, then they never played an elimination game. So if the Orioles win in 6, that's like the best. Because then they can celebrate going to the World Series in front of the home crowd. Just if they could do that for us, that would be okay.
Yeah.
So one thing we're trying to do on Camden Chat this week is work up some hatred towards Kansas City.
It's tough.
It's tough because the Royals are like our kind of kindred spirit. The Royals fans are like our kindred spirit, long-suffering fans. And in the NL, it's probably like the Pirates are the same fans. And not just because my former podcasting partner in crime, Andrew Gibson, now works for the Pirates, but just... I mean, they were the long-suffering team with the years-long playoff drought that made them kind of the laughingstock, just like the Orioles, and they both busted out of that the same year. But still, they're a long-suffering fan base, and you know, I can't be like, man, I hate the Pirates. And I certainly wasn't around for 1979 to have that residual hatred. But you know, like, I mean, like, how can you hate the Royals? It would be like, yeah, I hate kittens.
Mm-hmm.
I hate puppies, and I hate cute baby seals or whatever, you know, your favorite animal. It's like, you can't be like, no, I hate penguins. Like, no. Yeah, like, hating the Royals, I can't hate the Royals, but I have to. Because the Orioles are playing the Royals, and now it's like, well, Royals, I want you to lose, so now I have to be like, man, I really hate those Royals, and I'm struggling because it's hard to come up with things that I don't like. Like, I don't even know enough about Kansas City to hate things about Kansas City.
Let me tell you, I spent a long weekend in Kansas City a few years ago, and you would love Kansas City. Everyone there was the nicest person you ever met. We went to a couple of Royals games. The Royals were playing the White Sox, so I wasn't there rooting against the Royals. And the Royals fans were just, as good as could be. You know, everyone was so, and the city was just nice, and there's nothing that you could dislike about it. And that's so annoying. You know, it's so easy to hate. I mean, even I don't really have anything against the Detroit Tigers. I don't.
Again, and it's not as much in the sports department, but as far as, like, cities go, Baltimore and Detroit, I mean, they suffer many of the same problems. So it's like,
it's true.
I can't just hate Detroit, because it would be like hating Baltimore, which I can't hate Baltimore because I love Baltimore.
Right. But I had no problem hating the Tigers once the series started. And I mean, part of that is because they got some guys on their teams who seem like dicks, and their fans were so confident. One thing that we said to each other before it started was, don't you think that these guys are so a little too confident? I mean, oh yeah, maybe if our team had won the division 4 years running, we would also be that confident. But they just, it kind of, you know, was irritating.
It was
their
oozing,
level of confidence.
It was oozing from their fans too, because like,
right, that's it was the writers, their fans, all of them.
I did a Q&A with the guy from Bless You Boys, who's actually ascended to take over the site now that the season's over, and I asked him some questions, and I felt like I gave him the chance to kind of address if there was any areas where he wasn't confident or where he felt the Tigers were weak. And the guy, maybe I just did was too subtle in my question phrasing, but the guy just was completely confident and had no concerns whatsoever. And you know, no offense, Bless You Boys, Rob, but I think maybe you should have thought twice about that one. Because, well, Tigers got swept in 3 games, so maybe it was a little bit misplaced confidence.
Right. And, you know, the Royals fans are so much, at least the ones that we've come in contact with, are, you know, all basically the SB Nation Royals fans, are very much in the same place as the Orioles fans.
They're about as stunned as we are.
They're so happy to be there, and they know that it could be over like that. Just like the Orioles fans know. And I think that they find themselves in a similar position with, you know, fans of other teams coming by and being like, we're so happy for you guys, which the Orioles, we at Canton Chat, have also experienced. And it's just this big love fest for your team. And now I don't know. I'm just going to have to, like, root so hard. It's going to have to be all about loving my team more than about not liking another team, which I always love my team, even when I hate them. But I also never have any problems finding things to dislike about another team or this fan base. And so far, I have come up with Bupkis.
Like, the best I could come up with is Raul Ibañez has played for the Royals this year.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't even make their ALDS roster,
though. I sure hope
though.
He's not on the ALCS roster either.
Well,
I don't
if he
need,
is,
I don't need Lord Voldemort lurking in the other team. I don't need
if he does make their ALCS roster, then I will definitely have something to hate about
My
them.
My fear
that
factor
is,
going to increase significantly if he's on their roster.
But they're just a likable bunch.
Yeah, like, I mean, what was the number one? The number one thing you came up with for your "it's time to start hating the Royals" post was Billy Butler's brutal beating of Brad Bergeson. That's an exact quote, and that's very inspired alliteration there. Because,
thank you.
As we all know, no in quotes, because of course it's not the truth. But it's better for us to believe that it's true, even though we know deep down it's not. Billy Butler is who ruined Brad Bergeson's career.
Ruined
so
him.
He would have been on pace for 5 Cy Young Awards.
He was Greg Maddux.
He was going to win the Rookie of the Year award in 2009 if it wasn't for Billy Butler lining that pitch off of Bergeson's shin.
Well, you know what? That part isn't total. I mean, he probably wouldn't have won Rookie of the Year, but he would have gotten some consideration.
He might have been in like third place or something.
If he could have kept it up, he definitely would have been in the conversation. But you know what? He was never going to be good. But you know what? It's because of Billy Butler.
All because of Billy Butler just destroyed his shin and ruined his career.
Ruined his life. Thanks a lot, Billy. And, you know, when I've been watching the ALDS, and Billy Butler has been very enjoyable, especially when he stole that base and then gave that kind of, you know, motorcycle revving motion to all of, like, the fast guys who were actually in the dugout. And I was like, oh, I like this guy. And I was like, no, wait! He ruined Brad Bergeson.
Yeah, and he only stole that
them.
Base because he just had so much mass, like, crash into the second baseman and knocked the ball loose.
Yeah,
it was
a
shortstop. But he basically knocked the ball loose, and that's why he was safe.
Yes, but it was funny.
It was
funny. And he looked like a guy, you know, when I was watching the Royals in that series, and I mean, obviously, the good teams always look like they're having fun. But the good teams, when they're like the Royals or the Orioles, they look like they're having fun, plus they know that it won't always be like that. Like, you get that vibe. That's the vibe that maybe I'm projecting, but I feel that way. They just seem so much more happy. And damn it, I just want to hate them.
Like, I mean, think of the difference in the crowd between Kansas City and the Tigers. Like, I don't know if any of you out there would watch the other ALDS, but I mean, the Royals were just basking in love in their game three. It helps that they went into their home game up 2-0, whereas the Tigers were down 2-0. But I mean, it was just like it was like a funeral in there in Comerica Park, and you know, Kauffman Stadium was rocking.
Yeah, well, similar to 2012 when. And even though the Orioles lost that series in 5 games to the Yankees, Camden Yards was crazy. And Yankee Stadium wasn't even selling out their stadium.
Right. Like they had whole swaths of empty seats.
And they were booing their own players during the playoffs in a series in which they won. I can't even imagine. I don't ever want to be that. And I think that the Royals fans would never want to be that either. And it's just... They're very easy to root for, even though I'm rooting against them.
So our other KC hate that Stacy had in her post is apparently that they don't like Jeremy Guthrie as much as they should.
Well, yeah.
Jeremy Guthrie, who snuck onto our top 40 Orioles of all time list in the offseason.
He did. And, you know, Jeremy Guthrie was a bright moment, a bright, you know, thing in a dark period for the Orioles. And one thing that I have learned as a fan of both a bad team and now a good team is that you cling to those guys because that's all you have. Like, Guthrie was not fantastic, but he was good. And he also really seemed to love the fans and like Baltimore. And in an era when all the players were terrible, he was just this great, bright moment. And he's not a terrible pitcher now. He just, you know, he's their number four or number five pitcher and not the kind of guy you have a lot of confidence in the postseason if you have other options. I don't think that they actually dislike him because he's awesome. But they, over at Royals Review, they were, you know, oh, hopefully we don't have to see Guthrie this series. It would just be better if we didn't have to see Guthrie this series. And it made me sad because I like him so much.
Like, I'm happy that he will get to pitch in the playoffs finally, but I also hope he gives up 3 home runs in the fourth game, like as the Orioles are sweeping or something.
Yeah, you know, I do want the Orioles to sweep.
Just the least stress possible.
Yeah, I'd like them to sweep, and I would like for Guthrie to have some success. Not too much, but you know, I don't want him to get shelled or anything because, you know, guys like that, they're easy to like, and he put up with a lot. And even on Twitter now, if you ever pay attention to Jeremy Guthrie on Twitter, he's always saying good things about the Orioles and cheering them on. And I mean, what a great guy. Don't hate him, Royals fans. You guys are jerks.
Yeah. Freaking jerk Royals fans.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Arrogant Royals fans. I can't even.
See, I can't get my heart into it for long. Maybe I'll feel differently once like the series starts. But for now it's like
I don't know, maybe Alex Gordon will start like screaming at the Orioles fans and taking 4 years to get off the field, and he won't.
No, he probably won't. I'll tell you what will start making me hate them is when, like, Kane is diving all over the place, catching
Ugh.
Every ball hit in center field.
Yeah, I do hate the idea of that, but I do like watching it happen when it's not against the Orioles. Because it's just fun to watch.
It was a lot of fun. And, you know, if there's one unfortunate thing about this ALCS, it's that one of these fun, great stories has to come to an end. Like, if really it would be great, and obviously it's impossible because they're not in the National League, but it would be great if the World Series could be, like, Orioles-Royals somehow. Because then,
yes.
Cause, and you know, if whichever team wins the Orioles-Royals ALCS still has to go against the soulless, fun-sucking Cardinals or Giants. So,
yep.
Like, for all that, it might be the Orioles crush the Royals fans' dreams, and then they don't even, you know, the Orioles don't even give us anything to celebrate ultimately as far as a World Series. Or it could be the other way around. The Royals beat the Orioles, and then Royals don't even win.
Ugh, I can't even entertain that thought. You know, someone on Twitter said to me the other night that it breaks her heart that one of the two teams in the ALCS is not going to get to go to the World Series. And I told her, if you want, you can just pretend that this is the World Series. I won't tell anyone.
Yeah,
Because
it's
it's going to be more fun, I think, and more fulfilling, I think, than watching either the NLCS or, I mean, obviously, if the Orioles are in the World Series, that would be the most fun thing. But as far as from an outsider's perspective, how can you beat this ALCS? You can't.
you can't beat it. And if you've got tickets, you are one of the lucky ones because demand was very high. We're not going to dwell on it for long because there's no point being a downer because it's awesome the Orioles are in the ALCS, but it is a tougher ticket than even 2 years ago when the Orioles were in the playoffs. And I guess that's the price of the Orioles being good. As Stacy, I don't remember if you were the one who said this, and I feel like I've probably said it on Camden Cast before, but it'll be fun when Camden Yards is full all the time again with 45,000 of your best friends, even if they have no idea who Larry Bigby is.
That's right.
Not that that stopped the Orioles from sending Larry Bigby to some of their "We Won't Stop" pump up hype rallies. Which, like, let me tell you, what do you think of when you want to think of a good Orioles team? Do you want to think of Larry Bigby and Jay Gibbons?
No.
No, but that's who they sent. I don't remember which rally it was, but.
Well, Larry Bigby and Jay Gibbons apparently purchased tickets to go to the ALDS and were like hanging out in their Orioles gear on Utah Street. So they're fans now,
Well,
which is weird, but that was, you hear that joke about the only way someone's going to get to the playoffs is if they buy a ticket. Well,
that's how Larry Bigby and
they
Jay Gibbons got to the playoffs. Yeah, they.
did.
I see. I'm surprised the Orioles didn't like give them tickets if they were.
I mean, maybe they gave them tickets, but they were definitely not in like the awesome seats.
Right.
I don't know, but yeah, I think the rallies this year, they're just trying to round up whoever they can get, and nobody wants to see Larry Bigby. But what it's but you know what? I guess they are part of the Orioles history, whether we like it or not.
That's true. That's a very good point. And whatever. If that's who they got, that's who they got. I feel like the Orioles need practice on having playoff rallies, and hopefully they can give us some more reasons to
Hopefully,
practice.
yeah, they have plenty of opportunity in the
Make the
future.
World Series this year, and they can iron out some more kinks going between the ALCS and the World Series.
Yeah, they're gonna have to practice, learn how to also throw a parade. So.
Oh yeah. There you go. Get the Ravens marching band. No. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Although the Ravens didn't even have the marching band in their own parade, did they? I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know. I had to work. I didn't see it because I had to work, but if the Orioles have a parade, I will not have to work. Nothing gets to keep me from it.
Even if you have to work, you won't have to work.
No, I will not have to work. They couldn't keep me there. I will quit. I won't quit, but they'll let me
Well,
go.
one step at a time. We got the ALCS first, and
All right, all right. I won't request my vacation time for the parade yet.
Game one is less than 24 hours away. By the time you all listen to this, it will be the day of the game.
Hopefully,
Yeah,
less than 24
hopefully the
hours away.
day of the game because possible rain out. And that would be a mess because that throws the days off. Like so because the if and you may not know this, but the if game one is rained out, your game one ticket is actually going to be on Saturday, which was the originally scheduled game two. And then the people with tickets for Saturday, the originally scheduled game two day, will then go on a Sunday makeup day. So
Yeah, that's very
you
confusing.
won't even go on the same day.
Let's just hope that the rain blows out of here and we don't even have to worry about
Or
that.
maybe it's like a light mist that they can play through.
Yeah, bring your poncho.
Dress warm. Be ready for some
That's
cold
right.
weather so that you don't leave early like all the Nationals fans in their 18-inning game. I
That's right.
couldn't let the podcast go without getting a little shot in there, but I mean
Of course.
honestly, I don't think the same thing would happen at Camden Yards that so many people would just leave a game that started at like what is it, 5 o'clock on a Saturday and people were gone in like the eighth inning of an 18-inning game.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Like I'm glad that was not Camden Yards where that was happening. But dress warm so that does not happen to you. Wagging my finger, you can always take off layers, but you can't add layers you didn't bring.
Right. And don't forget your raincoat or your poncho or your umbrella, because you're going to need it.
You probably will need it, and the overhang will not protect you in the upper deck.
Too windy.
We experienced that for ourselves.
We have.
Was that the Eddie Murray statue game?
Yeah, that wasn't a fun game.
The only thing that made it manageable is it was... Stacy and I were there with Paul Fulkemer and Dave from Camden Chat, and we saw, I don't know how we survived that 3-hour rain delay, but then we came out and Chris Tillman was terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not dwell on that, because that was not nope. awesome, and the Orioles are perched on the edge of awesome.
They're so close.
Just need to take off and soar. My metaphor got confused there. Let's
a little bit, but that's all right.
Don't hold
you're,
it.
You're just hyped up.
I am. You know what? I am. I'm very excited. Sometimes people are like, oh, no, you just sound like you're totally chill. No, I'm excited. I can barely contain it, and it's like sometimes just keeping it chilled out is the only way I can stop like from totally flipping out, completely and totally flipping out. And I've been increasingly flipping out as they won more games in the ALDS, and if they're winning games in the ALCS, I will be similarly flipping out, because every win from now on is just that much more meaningful, because it's that gets them that much closer to the World Series or even winning the World Series. All that's in the way is the Royals. We kind of try to hate them, but we can't really.
Just because I don't hate them doesn't mean I don't want them to go down in flames.
Yeah, I want them to lose
badly.
I want them to lose and not have there be any doubt about it, because close games are stressful. It's bad for your liver if they make you drink. It's bad for your blood pressure, probably. Bad for your stress levels. Just, we don't want any stress. Just, you know, get like 4 runs in the first inning and then just cruise. Nelson Cruz can hit a home run. That would help them cruise.
Now you're just babbling.
I know. Let's see.
Because it's exciting.
It is exciting. It's and surely everyone out there feels it too. It's just, I mean, I don't know how old everyone out there was in 1997, but I was 13 the last time the Orioles were here, and I'm 30 now, so it's been a while. I was in ninth grade, and now I am old, and you know, it's been the first time in a long time, and it's cool to be here, but it'll be cool to be farther along too. All right, so Stacy, would you want to hazard a guess about how the series will go, like Royals Orioles, how many games?
Well, I think it's going to be a tough one. You know, I'd like them to sweep, but I think they're going to win. I think the Orioles are going to win, which I have to say. But I do think it, and I think that it's probably going to be, I'm going to say 6 games.
I guess I tipped my hat a little bit, or tipped my hand a little bit saying that, but I feel like Orioles in 6 is what just feels like the most likely to me at this time. And obviously a lot of things can go wrong to make that not happen, but
and you know, I want them to win in as few games as possible, but also it would just be amazing if they won at home. I don't want it to go 6 games if it doesn't have to, but
going back to the odds makers who set the Orioles as the World Series favorites to begin with, as far their guess for exact series result, both the best odds are the Orioles winning in 6 or 7 at 15-4. Every other possible outcome has worse odds than that.
Well, you know, like we said at the beginning, these teams are really evenly matched, I think. They have their individual skills, but, you know, when you kind of add it all up, it's pretty close. So it makes sense to me that it would be...
Like, Orioles bullpen versus Royals bullpen is kind of a wash. Orioles rotation feels pretty evenly matched. Orioles defense pretty evenly matched, although they're strong in different ways, but nonetheless on balance they're pretty even there. So it's like, where's the edge? Is the edge, well, the Orioles hit home runs? Yes, that's pretty cool. If they hit home runs in this series, now they hit home runs off of Cy Young winners, they hit home runs off of, you know, the bad Tigers bullpen guys. But talking about that Royals bullpen, Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera pitched a combined 142 innings and did not allow a home run this year. So, you know, that's a troublesome thing. if the Orioles are going to rely
time
on
to
a
change
late
that.
comeback. Yeah, it is time to change it. Maybe that means they're due. They're reverse due or whatever. And then, of course, the dugout. Buck Showalter versus Ned Yost. That's the one area where, you know what, the Orioles have an advantage. Because Yost is succeeding through this postseason despite poor decisions, and the Orioles are advancing in part because of Showalter's bold and correct decisions, like walking Nick Castellanos to bring up a guy who's pinch hitting, who had like six at bats all year, who shockingly grounded into a double play and ended the series. It was actually not that shocking, although I was very nervous at the time. But as the quote said in the Washington Post story about that game, Showalter came out to the mound, told them exactly what would happen, and then that's what happened.
Yeah, I love that story.
Like, Showalter came out to the mound, told Zach Britton, okay, we're going to walk this guy, next guy's going to hit into a double play, and then we go home. And dang if that's not what happened. So we're both guessing Orioles in six. I hope we're both right. Actually, I hope we're wrong because it's Orioles in four or five, but I hope we're right about the Orioles winning. It makes me feel weird being confident, but it's not enough to make me stop being confident because I believe in the Orioles. I think they can do it. I think they should do it. And, well, now it's up to the players to see what happens.
That's right.
So, Stacy, how many games do you get to go to?
Over the whole year?
No, for this series.
Oh, all of them.
Stacy will be at all the games. I will be lucky to be at one of the games. So,
yes, one of the greatest things we did this year was combine my 13-game plan with my in-laws' 13-game plan to get the 29-game plan, which allowed us to buy tickets quite a bit ahead of all of these 13-game plan shenanigans that have been going on. So, I mean, my ALCS tickets were locked up last Wednesday before the ALDS even started. So
there you go.
I'm in good shape. So that is a testimony for the 29-game plan if you can split it with someone, because that's a lot of games to go to through the year. But
if you're lucky enough to have a good enough relationship with your in-laws to split a ticket plan with them, that's the way to go about it, I guess.
So I'm really excited to be at all of these. I have been spending way too much money. But,
so,
you know, it's the first year that I've even had this opportunity. So until it becomes like a regular thing.
So Orioles in six, we're locking it in. And Stacy will
be
there to watch it if that comes true.
Oh, I hope
so. Here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
That's right.
But for tonight, that's all we've got. So for Stacy Fulkemer, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.